Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. We're located just outside of Boone on Bairds Creek Road. That's Highway 105 south out of Boone, probably 2 miles outside of the city limits. And then you take a right on Bairds Creek Road. We're 1 mile at Bairds Creek Road. If you are in the area, maybe visiting in the area, we'd love for you to come and be with us in any or all of our services. We have a church website, mountlebanonbc.org. You can find out all the church information, service times, archived radio broadcasts, sermons, all kinds of things on the church website. It's mtlebanonbc.org, and so you can go there at any time and find all of our pertinent information. But if you're a regular listener, you know we've been teaching on the United States Constitution, and we've been several weeks now studying this subject. I'm thankful for the subject of liberty. And as we've already said, this is the blessings of liberty. Liberty is a Bible doctrine, by the way. And I think, I'd have to sit down and add it up, but I think we're coming up on 4 years this summer that we've been doing the blessings of liberty, and we have not run out of material yet. There's a great deal when we're there's a great subject matter when we're talking about liberty. Because it is a Bible doctrine. The teaching of liberty is God's idea, not man's idea. But we've been on the U.S. Constitution now for several weeks. Now, if you are a regular listener on WZAP or 89.1 FM, maybe you noticed last week that the broadcast was not about the United States Constitution. We had to repeat a broadcast. We had some technical difficulties in last week's broadcast, but maybe we can find that, upload it to the church website. I don't think there wouldn't be any way to do a repeat of that. We get a week behind, and so we're going to try to fix that problem. But anyway, we're continuing on today. Last week was part number 8. Today, part number 9 of the Constitution. We've been studying it like this. There are 7 institutions that are mentioned in the United States Constitution. They are we the people, and this, by the way, is the order of importance. That's how the preamble to the Constitution starts out. We the people. We are a people or a government of the people, by the people. That's number one. Second, the militia. That's the armed citizenry. That's we the people armed. That's what the militia is. The militia is mentioned many times in the United States Constitution. The militia was in existence before the army, before the navy. The militia was intended to continue in existence. So we've looked at that. We've looked at the states individually. And we've looked at the United States collectively, which makes up the federal government. Then we've looked at Congress. Last week, we looked at the president in Article 2 of the United States Constitution that outlines the requirements, duties, and responsibilities of the president of the United States. And today, we're going to look at the Supreme Court. I'm probably not going to finish up today, but we will move on beyond these 7 institutions. But when we come to the Supreme Court of the United States, we come to Article 3 in the Constitution, and that deals with the subject of the Supreme Court. Now, this is one of the shortest articles in the United States Constitution. Article number 1 deals with Congress. And when we're talking about Congress, there's 2 houses. There's the Senate, and then there's the House of Representatives. This is the longest article. It has 10 sections, and it outlines the qualifications and the duties and the responsibilities that Congress has. Congress is very, very important. Congress is the hardest branch of government to corrupt because it is divided in two, and you have 100 senators and you've got over 500 congressmen. And so you've got all these people, checks and balances, working, and all of them to uphold or supposed to the Constitution. So you have Congress, and they have the largest responsibility, and they have the most duties to perform. Then Article Number 2, what we looked at last week, the subject of the executive office, the president, which is actually very short. It has four sections. Covers just a couple of pages in a small booklet that I have that has the Constitution in it. Then today we look at Article Number 3. This covers the Supreme Court. It's the shortest. It only has three sections. Now, the first three articles in the United States Constitution deals with the three branches of government. This is how our government was set up, that there would be three branches of government, and we've went over that. There is the legislative, that's Congress, there's the executive, that's the president, and then there's the judicial branch of the government, that's the Supreme Court, and then the other federal courts that are located all throughout the United States. We are to have a separation of powers. We're to have limited government, not unlimited. We are seeing, especially now, but this has been happening for years, the place where our federal government is becoming unlimited. There's nothing that it does not touch or control. You just think about it. There is hardly anything that you can do, anywhere that you can go, any commerce, buying, selling, traded, anything, building, your personal life. There's hardly anything that you can do that is not regulated, watched over, controlled in some way by the United States government, and or that the government does not have its hands in. We've moved far, far away from a limited government to almost an unlimited government. But in the beginning, we were designed in the United States of America to have a limited government. We were designed to have a system of checks and balances. Now, all three of these branches are to uphold and defend the United States Constitution. This is what it says in Article 6 in the Constitution. I'm going to just read part of this. It says, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land." We've established that before. The Constitution is to be the supreme law of the land. "And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding, an unconstitutional law is not a law at all." That's what this is saying. Then it says, "The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures, and all executive and judicial officers." Now that covers all three branches of government, the Congress, the executive, and the judicial. "Both of the United States and of the several states shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution." Your president, your Supreme Court justices, your federal judges, your congressmen, your senators, on the state level as well as the federal, all are bound by oath or affirmation to support and defend this Constitution. This Constitution, not another Constitution, not a new Constitution, but this Constitution as written. That is so important, and yet it is so neglected in the day in which we are living. We're seeing this being neglected, the Constitution. But the idea of a written Constitution, somebody said, where did this idea come from? Well, other countries, other nations. Somebody said to go all the way back to Aristotle, and he had the idea of a written constitution. But actually, you can trace a written constitution all the way back to the Bible. In 1 Samuel chapter number 8, chapter number 10, when Israel desired a king, there came come to a place where the nation of Israel said, we want to be like all the other nations, we want a king. They had been a theocracy where God ruled over them. Then God used judges to rule over them, the book of Judges. But they got tired of that, and they said, we don't like this arrangement. We want a king. We want to be like all the other nations. And at that time, there was a prophet named Samuel. And the prophet Samuel told the nation of Israel what it was going to be like if they chose to have a king. Now, God allowed them to have a king, but it was not without repercussions. I mean, it was going to change. Their lives were going to change if they desired to have a king. And Samuel, he told them what it was going to be like if they had a king. And 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 25 says, then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom. He said, this is how it's going to be. If we have a king, this is how it's going to be. And 1 Samuel chapter number 8 lays out the duties and the responsibility of the king and the people. This is what a constitution does. I'm not going to go to 1 Samuel chapter 8, but you can go over there and read that. But it said, then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom, notice this, and wrote it in a book and laid it up before the Lord. Samuel said, this is the way it's going to be if you want a king. He wrote it in a book and he laid it up before the Lord, which means here's a written document. Here's the testimony. Samuel is basically saying, you're going to see this is the way that it's going to be. In Exodus chapter number 18, God gave them rules for choosing, or laws for choosing rulers. And this is what they were supposed to abide by when they chose a ruler. And I mentioned this last week, Exodus chapter 18, verse 21. Now, they did choose their own rulers. They were a government by the people. Believe that or not, the people had a choice in their rulers. Exodus 18, 21, moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers. So they had the responsibility of choosing their own rulers. And then over in Deuteronomy chapter number 17, there were laws for choosing a king. They gave laws. God gave them laws for choosing a king, and several, he was not to be covetous. He was to be one among thy brethren. He was to be a natural-born citizen. We talked about that last week when we talked about the office of the president. But God gave them a constitution. The Lord gave them a system of government. Having a system of government is a great responsibility. It comes from the Lord. And we ought to be thankful for the system of government that we have. We ought to do what we can to uphold and make sure that it's being upheld. But the beauty and wisdom of the three branches of government is that if one branch of government becomes corrupt, the other two can check the corrupt branch. And so we call our government, or we say about our government, that we have a system of checks and balances. They're each to look at what the other one does, and all are to make sure that it lines up with the Constitution. You remember, they've taken an oath or an affirmation that they would uphold and defend the Constitution, so they're to keep a check on one another. Some people get aggravated. They say things aren't moving fast enough. It's designed that way because haste makes waste. That's an old saying or wives' tale or whatever you want to call it. But when we get in a hurry as a nation and just go changing and changing, I'll tell you, it's hard to turn back a ship as large as the United States of America. Once we get started in a certain direction, it's hard to change direction on something of this magnitude, we might say. So they're to keep a check on each other. And the very design of our system is to be slow and make sure we do things right and not in haste. They're to keep a check on each other. If one branch becomes corrupt, the other two can check them. They can catch that. If two branches become corrupt, well, there's still a chance that that one branch of government can stem the tide and put up enough of a fight until the next election, until something has changed. Now, here's the problem. If three branches of government fail to follow their constitutional duty, well, I get speechless right there. Well, we're in trouble. That's all I can say. If the three branches of government fail in their constitutional duties, we are in trouble as a nation. Well, we're in trouble as a nation. Anybody that has any discernment whatsoever of what is really going on in our nation would agree. We are at a place where we've never been before. We're in trouble as a nation. I have said this verse many, many times before. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? There's nothing we can do if the foundations are destroyed. Well, we've talked about that. Public confidence in all three branches of government is bound to be at an all-time low. Now, I don't have a statistic. I don't have a survey to back that up. But just by way of observation, I believe we could say that faith, confidence in our federal government, in the Congress, in the president, and even in the Supreme Court has to be at an all-time low. I know it is for Congress. I mean, their approval rating has been around 17-18%, seems like, for years. People have very little confidence in Congress, the Senate, or the House. The presidency, well over 50% have no confidence. I gave a survey last week, I believe it was, that 75% of Americans believe that Putin over in Russia is a stronger leader, is a very strong leader, and Obama is a very weak leader. And so we have this lack of confidence in the Congress, in the president, and sadly also in the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court, I will say, I believe has held on longer than the other two, but there's several examples of rulings that have come out in the past few years that have just honestly been unconstitutional. They have judged, they have ruled, they have come out on the side that would be anti-constitutional. And we could just mention a few things. A few years ago, there was a case up in Connecticut, and it had to do with the subject of eminent domain. Now, eminent domain is the doctrine or the belief that the government can come in for the public good and take your house and compensate you for it. If they're going to build a highway and they say, well, that's for the good of everybody, they can come in and use eminent domain, take your house, pay you for it, you've got to move along. Well, a few years ago up in Connecticut, there was a private industry wanted some lakefront property. I forget the town up there, but it was a private venture. And the town stepped in, and they were going to use eminent domain to take these people's property. And it was going to be the private company was going to come in. They were going to develop the land. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the city said, well, we're going to do this because we're going to raise the tax revenue in the city. We're going to provide jobs. So this is for the good of everybody. So they were going to seize these people's land. They didn't want to sell it. They didn't want to move. Many people would live there all their lives. And so it went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled on the behalf of the private industry. Now, if the government can take your land, your property on behalf of a private company, they can take your property for no reason. And so that was That is not the way eminent domain is to work. Your private property is your property. And if a company wants to come in and tear down your house and build a bunch of apartments or office buildings, well, that's just tough. If you don't want to sell, you shouldn't have to sell. But the Supreme Court ruled on behalf of the city and the private company that was wanting to do this work. There's the, I've talked about this before, the National Defense Authorization Act, which basically says the president can kill American citizens. He can use drones. You can be held without bail, without trial, without hearing as an American citizen. This is what the NDAA, these things have gone to court. The Supreme Court's ruled over the Defense of Marriage Act was nullified, overturned last year by the Supreme Court. The privacy concerns, you hear about the NSA, you hear about government spying. There's been, and this gets complicated, and it could go on forever. You start reading some of this stuff, and there's just a lot of things. Obamacare, that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, the government can make it a law that you have to have health care. You do not find anything about that in the United States Constitution, that the government is to provide health care for everybody. Well, maybe you're familiar with the term judicial activism. Judicial activism is what we are suffering from in America today when it comes to the United States Constitution. One definition for judicial activism that I found said this, that it was an interpretation of the United States Constitution holding that the spirit of the times and the needs of the nation can legitimately influence judicial decisions, and that especially applies to the Supreme Court of the United States. What that means is, when you have judicial activism, you have judges who, instead of interpreting and ruling on the law, they become a law unto themselves. And what that means is, well, they just do what they want to do. They say, well, it might say this, but for the good of the country. Or they say, well, it might say this, but you know, we're living in different times. And they just do what they want to do. They just make things up. They change words. They take things out of context. A good example of that would be the continual fighting over the Second Amendment. Now, the Second Amendment, we all know, or you probably know, has to do with the right of the people to keep and bear arms. It's very short. It's very simple. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, you have people, they say, well, that means the National Guard. No, that does not mean the National Guard. There was no National Guard in that day and time. It was the militia. But it's not talking about the Army. It's not talking about the Navy. It says the right of the people. The right of the people we're talking about. Well, somebody says, well, that means that you can have a firearm in your home, locked up in a safe or in a gun lock. And that doesn't mean you can carry a firearm around on your person. Well, no, that's not what it says. It says the right of the people to keep and bear arms. That bear, that means to carry around. Well, that means you can have a .22 or a shotgun to go bird hunting with, but this another type of gun, a semi-automatic, you can't have that. No, that's not what it says. It says the right of the people to keep and bear arms.
The North Carolina Association of Educators,
that was the same kind of arms that the Army had, the Navy had. Well, that was before we had police. Now we've got 911. You can just call the police, and you won't have to. You don't have to have a gun. That's not what it says. It says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's very plain. But there's many, many come along want to reinterpret and change what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights says. The best way I can explain what the Supreme Court does and other courts do in our nation is by comparing them to those who would change the words of the Bible. There's a big word for that in studying the Bible. It's called dynamic equivalency. And what dynamic equivalency means is this. When Bible liberals do not like a word or a phrase, they simply say, well, what God really meant to say, and then they just change it. It doesn't matter how plain it is or how much evidence it is. That's dynamic equivalence. They say, God didn't mean to say that. He meant to say something else. This is why the Bible says that no prophecy of the Scriptures of any private interpretation. You can't just come along and say, well, God really meant to say something else, and just change it. That is, by the way, why there are hundreds of different versions of Bibles out here on the market, is because of this idea, this big word of dynamic equivalence. They say, well, the Bible really meant to say this. And so they just change it when they want to. Whatever whim, whatever reason. The new versions. I'm talking about, you go from the King James and out from there. These other new versions. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands of changes. Well, somebody's trying to sell you a Bible. A new one, a different one. Well, they do the same thing when it comes to the Constitution. When constitutional liberals do not like what the Constitution says, they say, well, it's a living document. And it being a living document, they just simply change it to suit themselves to whatever it is that they want it to say. They do the same thing. A Bible liberal is dangerous, but a constitutional liberal has power, has authority. We're talking about the Supreme Court. An example of that would be the 13th and 14th Amendments. And the 13th and 14th Amendments were enacted after the Civil War in 1865, 1868. They both have to do with slavery, and they have to do with the status of those who had previously been slaves. They had to make an amendment concerning this. Well, the 14th Amendment is the only place, the only mention of the equal protection of the laws. That's where that phrase, the equal protection of the laws. And they were talking about those who'd been slaves. Now they're not slaves anymore. They're just like everybody else. They were to be treated under the law the same as everybody else. Last year, the Supreme Court of the United States applied this, and they overturned the DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. They said, well, that applies to everybody. Any relationship whatsoever, they are to have equal protection of the laws. But let me say, the framers of the 13th and 14th Amendment did not have homosexuality in mind in 1868. That is taken a historical document, changing it to apply it, to make it to mean something else. Well, judges can justify anything if they put enough legalese on it and enough words in there. Well, our time is quickly come and gone today, but we do appreciate you listening in. We appreciate the opportunity to come this way with the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. It is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. We hope you have a good day, and God bless you is our prayer.